You'll forgive me if I deviate a little bit and won't do exactly topics from Tanakh. We'll do topics from our past in relation to the present and these days. We're in the Yemei HaOmer. I just want to note that in a general way, sometimes the Yemei HaOmer, the days of the Omer, get a little bit, if you'll allow me to say, sidetracked, will become characterized by the elements of Avelus that we practice, both because of the deaths of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva, and also, not everybody realizes this, but the Minhagim of Avelus also very much have to do with the massacres in the times of the Crusades that occurred at this time. But that is an element of Sphira. That's not what the essence of the days of Sphira is. Essentially, the days of Sphira are very, very high and great days, and we shouldn't lose focus of that. The days of Sphira are the days designated to Hashem moving us from the raw product we were when we came out of Mitzrayim and moving us light years ahead toward being in position to actually have a rendezvous with him at Har Sinai, to be brought to the highest of places and to set us off from that very great place for our mission for the rest of history. These are very, very great days, very high days, days where Hashem is actively involved in our efforts to bring ourselves, to make ourselves fit and presentable to bond with Him. And in fact, the Ramban makes a very straight connection between Pesach and Shavuos through the Yemei HaOmer with his famous statement that it actually is kind of like Chol HaMoed, paralleling the, the days between, we have the 7 days between Sukkot and Shmini Atzeres, which is essentially a different Yom Tov. And here we have, he says, we have the 7 weeks corresponding to those 7 days between Pesach and Shavuos. So I'm just noting that. Let's appreciate that these are high days, days of where Hashem is actively involved in our efforts to elevate ourselves, to make ourselves more fit for Him. And let's not lose focus of that. Now, particularly here is where we want to address in this context, indeed, what Chazal tell us about the deaths of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. And we're told that why did they go through this epidemic? Al shelo nagu kavod. They didn't treat each other with due respect.
They also didn't share their different total one with another.
There are various aspects of not showing each other due respect. So
Was there a
I want.
specific reason that 12,000? I mean, why 12,000?
24.
Twelve thousand pairs.
Right, 12,000 pairs. Why was that the number? Well, that was the amount of Talmidim that he had. I don't know. I don't know. What I want to focus on now is not so much the harshness of what happened, which is a separate discussion, it has to be understood, but this very idea that Hashem considered it so critical, the covet aspect. Now let's appreciate something. Let's not get the wrong impression. Let's not think that they were talking meanly to each other. It's not what we're told. And there are different terms for them. There are different terms for that than not treating each other with covet. That would be told, you have expressions in Tanakh and in Chazal of speaking meanly, of hurtful speech. That's not what we're told. And as Rabbi Avigdor Miller used to point out, we're talking about the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. We can assume, or we may assume, that they were very high-level people. They spoke to each other nicely, but they didn't treat each other with the reverence, with the full level of covet, meaning it was the negative rather than a positive. It wasn't that there were bad things going on between them. It was that the positive wasn't what it ought to be. The positive, I'm sure that they spoke civilly to each other. They acted politely, but the positive wasn't what it should have been. And this is what I want to focus on, to understand the idea of kavod, and to understand that the concept of being mechabed another the person goes much beyond and much deeper talking nicely. Even more than that, it goes beyond talking respectfully. And here I want to take a step back and we'll understand why this is very relevant specifically to the days of Sfira. Did we talk about before Pesach, the matzah as in a spiritually elevated food? I think we spoke about that. That's right. In other words, the matzah, in terms of its spiritual properties, is really more appropriate. It's not a type of bread that people in this world would want to bake. People in this world, people are shy to the material world, want to bake geschmack bread. It's properly risen and it's soft and it's fluffy, and that's what we want to bake. Matzah is the ideal bread outside of the physical realm. I mean, it's already for someone who transcends that. It feeds the spirituality of the person. We spoke about this. We spoke about that. That's why matzah is the appropriate form of bread for the Beis HaMikdash, which is the connecting point between the spiritual and the physical worlds. Matzah facilitates that transition from the physical to the spiritual. So they say that matzah was actually a certain medium leading them toward man, which was on a whole different level. I think we cited the Rashba says that the reason that Hashem had them eating the matzah was part of this process of making them fit to stand at Har Sinai and get this very great level of nevuah. Well, let's take it a step further. When we spoke about Pesach, about how the whole process of Yetzias Mitzrayim was Hashem's great way of introducing them to Him, of introducing us to Him. But with the matzah, we spoke about this with regard to the Korban Pesach also. There was another very critical point. And that is that Hashem is saying, as we're moving into this reality of me and you, it's not just about you getting to know who I am, but you now have to be introduced to who you are. You may not know that yet. You may see yourself coming out of Mitzrayim, being in Mitzrayim, or even being in our reality today. As a human body begins and ends with that, a human body, flesh and blood, begins and ends with that. There are millions of others, all different kinds, all different types. And we happen to be the chosen people. But when Hashem fed us the matzah, and in fact, the Korban Pesach, we discussed that, when Hashem fed us the matzah, Hashem was essentially saying, 1 minute, 1 minute, 1 minute. I want you to realize that the body that you're familiar with is a very superficial level of who you are. It's a very external level of who you are. That's not the true you. And I want to start familiarizing you with the deeper you, with the higher you, with the you that actually warrants a relationship with. I want you to stop becoming familiar with your identity as a neshama, with your identity as someone who's really is place is in the highest of realms. And where the body is actually not who you are, and that Olam Hazeh is not really your natural habitat. It's not your real comfort zone. Now, you may think of yourself as a body. We said a few times, let's repeat it again, that actually the body is not who you are. We've given a mashal a few times of imagine a person who's put under general anesthesia, all of his body is put under general anesthesia except for his little toe. One of his little toes is left out of it. Now imagine also if this little toe was conscious and is able to understand things. So this person now experiences life as a little toe. That's what this person thinks he is, right? Little toe begins and ends with that. That's all I'm aware of. That's all I experience. I am a little toe. Okay, you talk in terms of pleasures. What pleasures are there available for the little toe? What could it possibly dream of? A hot bath, a massage, and that's it. What? Nothing else is relevant. Everything else is, from the perspective of living inside a sock. What distresses could there be? What troubles could there be in this world? Well, either being stepped on or stepping on a little piece of Lego. I mean, that's basically the beginning and end of problems. And you try to explain to this stone, no, there's so much more to be had there. There are sights to see, sights to see. Don't see anything. There's a whole world of food out there that is such a major part of the pleasure of life. Little toad just doesn't relate to that. What are you talking about? You're gonna stick things into me, like what? And saying, there's a whole world of pleasure. There are things to hear. There's all kinds of experiences to be had. But right now, all that is completely beyond you. But that's only because the anesthesia is in place. Once the anesthesia wears off, you're suddenly going to experience who you really are. And you'll suddenly really start living life, and then you'll understand what a tiny sliver of life your current reality is. That's our state. That's our state. The body that we know, once we're plunged into Olam Hazeh, we don't sense the neshama right now, but that's the real you. That's who you are forever. That's who you are for all of eternity. And the body is that little external piece of you that you feel like that's who I am. And here's where Hashem is coming and saying, well, part of this process is, again, not just to introduce you to me, but to start connecting you to you, to start living on your own higher level, to start appreciating who you really are. And this was part of what was being conveyed with the matzah. I think we've quoted here. It was Rav Shimshon Fol Hirsch indicates the following understanding. Man is called Adam. Why? Why is man called Adam? Adama is from the Adama. So let's ask a very simple question. So why aren't cows called Adam? Why aren't cats and cockroaches and ants called Adam? Why isn't the soil called Adam? They're all from the Adama also. Why specifically man? So Rav Hirsch gives the following understanding, which is so profound. Here, I'm going to give it over in my words. But everybody here, I understand, are Anglos of some form or the other, right? I'll just use American simply because I'm more familiar with that. But you apply it to whichever nationality you may be from. Where are you more likely to be identified as an American? In the United States or in Israel? In the United States, has anybody ever pointed to you and said, oh, there's an American? Right? In America, you are in your natural place as an American. Right? But there, everybody's American. You don't stand out in any way. Nobody's going to look at you in the US and say, I think that person is American. Right? It's when you are not in that, I'm saying this in a very borrowed way, obviously, right? Everybody understands that actually our natural place is here. But I'm talking in that very superficial sense of your language, okay? Your culture, right? It's when you're not here. When you're somewhere else, then people will point to you and say, oh, there's an American, right? So here's the point. This is the magnitude of this point. You're going to talk about a cat and say it's Min Adama. Of course, everything is from the Adama. But everything on earth is earthly beings. But the fact that we're calling man, man, is Adama is actually indicative of the fact that man, the Adama represents man's misfit, meaning man is really not a resident of Earth. Man is really shaykh to the highest of spheres. Man is really shaykh to the highest of spheres. Just what? Among all the heavenly beings, man is the only one that actually has some earth to it. And therefore, in man's natural habitat, in the highest of places, yeah, it stands out. The fact that you have Adama to you, also have that element, stands out. You are a bit of a misfit in that sense. You're the only one from all the great heavenly beings that actually has Adama to you. And that's why you're called Adama. It's a reflection of the fact that you are not Adama, but you have this funny little element of Adama to you. And that's why to talk about anything that's an earthly being, we're not going to call it Adam. It's part of the whole big Adama system. We come from the highest of places, just that we have that Adama to us also. And this is what Hashem wants us to stop becoming familiar with as He is moving us into the realm of being His sons, of being His people. So let's pause there. And now come from another angle in order to really get to where we're trying to get. Let's come back to Kavod. Let's come back to Kavod. Is Kavod a good thing for a person or a bad thing for a person? And I expect everybody to quote explicit things showing one way and the other, right? It says, Akina v'atayva v'akovid mitzim es ha'odam. Kavod is something that can make a person be lost from this world and from the next, et cetera, people who pursue kavod, it's a terrible thing. Then on the other hand, we're told to be mechabed other people. 1 minute. You're never told to feed another person ham, even if he's hungry. Right? If kavod is so bad for a person's spirituality, why would you be told to give another person kavod? Well, ask another question. Well, ask another question. We see that we're also told to preserve our own kavod. There are all kinds of halachas where when a person's kavod, when a person's honor and dignity is at stake, so in dinim, rabbinic laws, chachamim made different leniencies in order to preserve a person's kavod. Why? On the contrary, your kavod is being smashed? That's great. So let's understand something, and this is a deep subject that has to properly be understood. Kavod is essentially one of the most important things on earth, and one of the most important things we have, and one of the most important things to appreciate and preserve. Because we don't want kavod to go in the wrong direction. And this is what we'll talk about. This is really our subject. The essence of kavod, this is how I received it from my rabbeim, is to be able to relate to the deeper meaning of something. Meaning as follows. Meaning as follows. I'll give an example. You have a Sefer Torah. It's a piece of parchment. You know what? Let's talk about a person. Let's go straight to the point. Let's talk about a person. A person, like we said before, all you see with your eyes is a pile of flesh and blood. All you see with your eyes is a pile of flesh and blood. Okay? Looks the same as all the other animals. Looks the same as all the other animals. Slightly more pale and slightly more bald than other mammals. Right? But that's basically it. And indeed, seeing a person without clothing, I'm not talking about sneezing now. I'm not talking about sneezing now. Let's say you take a man and he covers the parts of the body that need to be covered. But other than that, he's walking around, in his bare body, other than that. When you see that, you're basically seeing the form of another beast, what we call the most intelligent of beasts. But what you're seeing, even though that's what you see with your eyes, what you're seeing is actually not true, because you're talking about, as we've been discussing, a much greater being, a much greater being. And therefore, Hashem says, I want you to take steps to bring out the actual truth, even though it's not physically apparent. And therefore, for example, Hashem tells Adam and Chava, after the chait, they made themselves enough clothing to cover their nakedness. But Hashem says, no, that's not enough. I want you to have robes. What's the idea? It's like the Gemara said, clothing is the kavod of the person. Clothing is what gives a person his dignity. But what does this mean? What this means is that when you see a person who is dressed respectably, you're seeing the higher being. It's bringing out that the person is higher than what might meet the eye. It's the clothing that helps you to artificially see what's really there. Follow what I'm saying? This is a deep point. But if you just look with your eyes, you won't see what's really there. You need to take steps to bring it out in order to connect to the truth of it. You put on clothing. Clothing is something artificial. When you put on clothing, and all of a sudden, the person has that more dignified, elevated look. And now you have a better picture of what you're actually seeing. Everybody with me on this? Okay. I have a better picture of what you're actually seeing. Same goes, this is really the whole idea of covet. Let's talk about a Sefer Torah. Let's talk about a Sefer Torah. Sefer Torah is a piece of parchment. We consider parchment beautiful because of association, meaning because for many years we've been associating it with Kisei Kodesh and putting it into a special context, we consider it something pretty. But totally objectively, take a piece of parchment versus a piece of printing paper. Parchment is a coarse, less white piece of paper, basically for all practical purposes. It doesn't look overly pretty. But then you write a Sefer Torah on it, and all of a sudden it carries immense kedusha. This is something that has to be treated with reverence. But if you just look at it as is, you don't necessarily see that. Yes, the ksav is beautiful, etc. So what are we told to do? We're told, oh boy, no, you have to take the Sefer Torah, you put it in a beautiful mantle. Zekeli van Beulah. You have to add trappings. You have to add external trappings to the Sefer Torah. You put it in a beautiful mantle. You put it into a magnificent Aron Kodesh, and you take it out only on occasion. And now you're creating around the Sefer Torah an aura that can, an aura of Kedusha, an aura that connects you to what the Sefer Torah really is. That's covet. You're treating it in a way that brings out its true value, the value that you don't necessarily see with your eyes. Please speak up if this isn't clear. This is a bit deep, but it's very, very fundamental. Now, if you think of it a bit further, all of our lives as Jews is about bringing out Kvod Hashem. What does that mean? What that means is that if you look around at the world, Hashem set the world up in a paradoxical kind of way. On the one hand, you see Hashem's wonders all around you. But on the other hand, it's possible just not to see any of them. You can just see a physical system that has no godliness to it. What are we here for as Jews? To bring out, no, when you're seeing a world, don't just see physicality. We are busy doing all kinds of things our whole life to bring out there's godliness in the world. While you go into a supermarket, in Chutz La'aretz, there's two parallel aisles. They all have the same products, just one is the kosher aisle and one is the non-kosher aisle. What's the difference between them, besides the fact, just in the very material sense, every product in the second aisle is $2 more than in the first aisle. And you walk into the supermarket, there's a whole bunch of people shopping in the first aisle, and you walk over to the second aisle. Why? Because there's Hashem. Those extra dollars that you're spending are bringing out that there's something deeper to the world. Everything about you that you do in your life, every mitzvah that you do, is giving physical expression to the fact that there is Hashem here. You're bringing out the covet of Hashem. You're showing that there's something beyond the surface of the world. And that is covet. That is covet. So now, and this is really something that deserves a lot of elaboration, appreciating how our whole life is about Kvod Shamayim, bringing Hashem out into the physical world where you don't see it. And that's why Kvod Shamayim, that's the idea of Kiddush Hashem, bringing out Hashem's presence where otherwise it's not seen. And therefore, you have to appreciate that Kiddush Hashem can be achieved even in the privacy of your room with nobody else around. Of course, there's Kiddush Hashem in the fact that you're making a display for 20,000 people, and now it's brought out to 20,000 people. But if you're in the privacy of your own room, and I won't even talk about some major temptation. Just let's say you're sitting in the privacy of your own room and you're thinking about Hashem. You're bringing Hashem into the physical world. You're giving Hashem expression in the physical world. You're bringing him into your brain. This is bringing out Kvod Shamayim. It's bringing out what's beneath the surface and giving it its due place. Now, let's circle back to our own covet and being mechabed another person, which is really the same point. Let's understand that when I see another person, I can either just see, like we said before, most intelligent of beasts, or say that he's dressed nicely, I see a human being, fine. But the question is, do you see even more than that? Do you see what a Bnei Yisrael really is? Do you see what the significance of Tzelem Elokim is? Do you see that there is Shechina being carried on this person? If you do, we would expect you to relate reverently. The same way, when you walk into a shul, you walk into a shul, you can't just act frivolous. You have to walk in with a sense of trepidation because you have to relate to what's really going on here. When you meet another Jew, when you're interacting with another Jew, you have to realize that you're interacting. You have to show and display that you're interacting with a very high charge of Kedusha. You're interacting with Shechina now because you're interacting with another Jew. You're interacting with a what we call a Merkava Lashchin, a carrier of the Shechina. You're interacting with a Tzelem Elokim. You're interacting with a Chelek Elokam Imah.
What about non-Jews?
Let's set that aside for the moment and see if we can circle back to it. Okay?
What
And
about Jews' opinions or parents who don't agree with, let's say, who have a different derech of Yiddishkeit and take your derech?
So, you know what? These questions that you're asking can be broken into a million parts. But first, I want to make sure we have the basis. And that is that if you're dealing with a Ben Yisrael, if you're dealing with a Ben Kehel Chai, you are interacting with very high charge of Kedusha.
And when you go to shul, you don't run into shul. Go 5 minutes earlier. You came, 5 minutes earlier. You walk in, not run into
Same idea. Same
shul.
idea. It's all the same point. You're showing the kavod. You're bringing out the depth that lies beneath the surface. And the truth is, you say, "Oh man, I'm supposed to act with that reverence toward another Jew. What about me?" That's the first question we should ask. You're telling me to mechal the Jews. What about myself? And the answer is absolutely. That's right. In that sense, you should relate to yourself with reverence too. And this is why we actually have various halachas that are aimed at that also. Like we said before, preserving your dignity as a human being is something that Chazal saw of paramount importance because we want you to keep reminded of you who you are. That's really the only way you can treat the other Jew with that reverence. It starts with you. And therefore, we have various halachas. We have halachas about, for example, how are you supposed to eat with kavod? Right? Don't say, "Wait a minute, I keep all of halacha. Everything I'm eating is kosher l'mahadrin. Let me dig in like a slob. I've been waiting for this." We have halachas that come and tell you that no, how you're eating and all various activities that you're busy doing have to be done with kavod. Have to be done with kavod. All these things are to keep us reminded of the fact that I am not just stomach. I'm not just taste buds. There's something much greater to me. I'm dipping into a world that's below me now because I need to do that. But we don't want you to get lost in that world. We want you to keep reminded of who you are. And this is why clothing also. Part of the point of clothing is for you to dress in a dignified way in order to keep reminded of your status, in order to keep reminded of who you are. And now we come back to this point of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. The message here is, as you're moving toward Kabbalah Satera at Har Sinai, part and parcel of being able to appreciate the magnitude of a relationship with Hashem, the awe of receiving the Torah, is to be able to appreciate who it is that Hashem is creating that bond with, in order to create, to appreciate the magnitude of who his people are, of the people that he chose. If you see a Jew opposite you and you realize this is a person that Hashem handpicked, you have to relate with reverence, almost trepidation. It's going to be too much for us to handle. If you lived in a hick town where there was only one other Jew in the area and you encounter him once a week, then I would say, you know what? You know that you're going to be meeting this Jew, to sit down and learn Musar beforehand. You have to read up on the value of a Jew. Go to the mikveh before you meet another Jew. Make yourself fit to actually come into contact with a Jew. But Baruch Hashem, We're living in a place where we're surrounded by Jews all over the place. It's going to be beyond our capacity to be living this way on a regular basis. But let's get the idea. Let's get the idea that yes, when you're looking around the Jews around you, and when you're looking at yourself, when you're looking in the mirror, you are seeing something that is that Hashem holds in very, very high regard, and that carries immense kedusha, and that's how you want to be relating to it. And therefore, Hashem is coming and saying, particularly in the days of the Omer, is when this failure is that much more acute. The lack of ability to be able to relate with that reverence, that is a that's a contradiction. Of course, we can all only do it to a human degree, but apparently they weren't doing it to the level that was expected of them. And Hashem is saying, as we're moving toward Har Sinai, as we're moving toward Har Sinai, this is a very fundamental part of it, to be able to relate to and see the grandeur of another Jew, and to be able to relate with reverence. And yes, to relate with reverence to yourself also in that sense. Where does covet become a problem? Covet becomes a problem when you just need to be feeding on it from people, which means that it's not the real thing. That's what Avoda said, that in that the covet is a human need. Covet is a human need. Why? Because we do have that weight. And when that weight is not being related to right, something feels off. But the problem is, if you go about trying to satisfy that need in an artificial way. Rabbi made a very powerful statement. He said, and in Slabodka, they used to say, used to be that everybody needed a spoonful of kavod every day. They said, in our times, everyone needs a plateful of kavod every day. But they would stress that that is across the board, no exceptions to the rule. So Avoda said, he said, well, 1 minute. We have seen great people who have absolutely no need for any recognition from anybody around them. They have no need for covet. How do we reconcile that? And I've seen such people. I've seen such people. People who the way anybody around them regarded them meant absolutely nothing to them. So I've always said, how do you reconcile that with this given that a built-in part of who a human being is the need for covet? Avoda gave a very powerful answer. He lived that answer well. He said they get the covet from themselves. They don't need it from the people around them. They have that deep appreciation of the magnitude of the greatness of what it means to be a Tzelem Elohim, that what anybody else said was basically irrelevant. They had it in them. So like we said before, part of this process of moving toward our Sinai is learning who we are. And learning who we are, which automatically involves who the person opposite you is, the person you're dealing with is. Now, all I'll say to address the questions of, so how does this work in all of its different variables? All I'll say is that there are going to be different degrees of how much Shechina a person carries. But yes, when you know that a person is a carrier of the Shechina, he deserves your respect. Then, on the practical level, there may be variables in terms of where the person is at, where the person is holding, etc. Let's not let that distract us now.
What about that made those Rabbi Akiva students so they didn't give enough kavod because they didn't agree with the opinion of the other guy or the derech of the other guy? Like, why wouldn't they have given enough kavod?
Right now, I'll just say in a general way. In a general way, when we're talking about different drachim, but we know that this person is living up to his whole fiber is an Eved Hashem, child of Hashem. He lives with that identity. And we have different drachim. He doesn't even have to agree with him, but certainly the covenant should be there. We have very, very beautiful examples of great people who may have had sharp disagreements with others, and that's fine. That's fine. Yet the covet and the reverence is there. It's very beautiful to see when you're talking about the Jewish people are a sharp bunch and they're a skeptical bunch, and it's good. But when it comes to disagreement, and disagreement will always abound among Jews. Why? Because when you're talking about highly intelligent people, disagreement will abound. And everybody knows about the Jew on the desert island, right? Right? The Jew on the desert island, everybody knows about that Jew. The two shuls, that's right. There was a Jew on a desert island who had, he had been abandoned there. He'd been living there for years by himself until finally people found him. They saw he had built himself a whole life with all kinds of communal institutions on the island. And they saw that there were two shuls. So they asked him, why do you have two shuls on the island? He said, well, this is the shul I daven in, and that's the shul I'll never step foot in. Right? Okay, so disagreement will abound. That's fine. That's fine. And depending on the level of the people, you will see whether that turns into a personal thing. Yes, there will always be different strata, depending on the level of the people. The higher up you go, the more you'll see that the disagreement can be there, and it's acknowledged. And yet, in terms of the reverence, in terms of the covet, in terms of the way they're relating to each other, it doesn't have to be a contradiction. If you see otherwise, so rise above it. Say, okay, I'm going to be in that higher stratum. It could be disillusioning. Don't let it. Yes, I'm saying it as simple as that, and I know it's not that simple. Nevertheless, that's really the bottom line. Okay, so yes, we'd say that that's one of our goals in the days of the Sphira, in terms of moving ourselves toward being fit with that great rendezvous at Har Sinai, toward being fit with that great pasuk that says, you know, Heviyani HaMelech Hador, Hashem is bringing us into his innermost chambers. Part and parcel of that, just like we say, it's appreciating the magnitude of a relationship with Hashem, but also appreciating what Hashem sees in us and quite what that means about us, being able to appreciate that, to sense that, and to live up to it, Bezos Hashem. So we have a question here. I said that animals were created from the earth. Animals are not from earth. Hashem said, let there be, and it came to be. Okay, so let's note that that's true with regard to parts of the Bria, but how did Hashem actually say it with regard to the animals? The words he used were, when Hashem spoke about the creation of animals, the way he expressed it was, let the earth bring forth the animals. That was the way that Hashem chose to do it, versus man, where we see Hashem make that combination. He just says, Naaseh Adam, and then it says, Mino Adama, Vayipach Ba'af Bav Nishmas Chaim. That's really worth its own study to see why, what the parsha of the creation of man entails versus the creation of the rest of the world. Okay, Agutavach, Agutavach.
Laura.